The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All the way from Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film series of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners. Let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. And how's it going? My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I don't think I'm messing with Dumbledore and trying to put my name into the Triwizard or into the Triwizard Cup or what, the Goblet of Fire, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. If I'm underage, because God knows what only happens when you do something stupid and you think you outsmart a Dumbledore, and you don't.
No,
I'm not willing to take that risk. I mean, I get it. You got 1,000 galleons, which who knows what that translates into American dollars or whatever. Who knows? But I don't think 1,000 galleons is worth it.
To some, they may say it is. To some, they may say
it is. If it was like 100 grand, am I doing it? Probably not. But if it was $1 million, sure. Sure. Maybe $1 million. Yeah, I'll take the risk.
Okay.
But for 1,000 galleons, I don't think so.
1,000 galleons is worth a lot of money.
What's it at most? What's it worth? 20 grand?
I don't know. I can Google it. I can see how much a galleon
the conversion
is worth
rate
of galleons. Yes, Blake. you can volley for me for a little bit.
Yeah, sure. As Mary looks up the conversion rate from galleons to American dollars, mm-hmm. at 19 what 90
1 galleon is about $7.30.
All right, so 1,000. So you're looking at $7,000.
Well, more than that because you got the 30 cents each time. But sure. Maybe it's 10 grand.
So let's call it 10 grand. Yeah. Are you willing to put yourself at risk for 10 grand?
I mean, you know, Madame Pomfrey will put you back together.
She'll have some Skele-Grow somewhere.
Yeah, I'd be fine with it.
That's if she's not too busy drinking some vodka. Oh, man.
So, of course, here we are. Chapter 12, The Triwizard Tournament. The Triwizard Tournament was first established some 700 years ago as a friendly competition between the three largest European schools of wizardry, Hogwarts, Beauxbatons, and Durmstrang. A champion was selected to represent each school, and the three champions competed in three magical tasks. The school took it in turns to host the tournament once every 5 years, and it was generally agreed to be a most excellent way of establishing ties between the young witches and wizards of different nationalities. Until, that is, the death toll mounted so high that the tournament was discontinued.
I mean, how many people are dying for you to be like, no?
It's not even people. How many kids?
Yeah, how many kids
students
are dying?
Are dying?
How many kids are dying for you to be like, yeah, no, you know what?
It's every Triwizard tournament basically just became a duel because there was always like one dying and they were like, yeah, this isn't really working.
This is not working. You know, Mary, you said something here that it just popped into me, into mm-hmm. my brain here. The three largest schools mm-hmm. in Europe. So that means, I think implicitly, that there are more schools in Europe than those three.
Well, I would like to think of specialty schools.
Oh, like a vocational school?
Yeah, or you just really focus on herbology.
Got it, okay.
You know, you think about the charter schools that focus on the performing arts, things like that.
That's
or
gotta,
a vocational school, like you said.
That's got to kind of suck, though, because like...
What, if it's something that you're passionate about, Longbottom could go to Hogwarts or a school that focuses on herbology, I'm pretty sure he would have done
no,
that.
No, I don't mean that. I mean, I think that's fine. That's great. Like, all about the vocational school life, because I think that's really important. But when you start having the Triwizard Tournament and everything, you're never invited to this thing.
Yeah.
That sucks.
That's what happens with these little schools.
That sucks. I feel
but
bad
maybe
for that.
They don't want that. Maybe they chose to have that life and they don't want to have to deal with the sports or people die.
That's a fair point.
That'd be my place.
Staying away from the kid killing games.
Yes. All right. So before we get into this episode and we delve into this chapter, we want to thank all of you at jointhenerdclan.com for making this possible. We are just so, so blessed. And if you are not yet a member, head on over. jointhenerdclan.com.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
So we kick things off where everyone enters the Great Hall. They're super duper wet. Harry gets to see the sorting ceremony for the first time since he was actually sorted.
Yes.
We get to meet Mad-Eye Moody and learn about the Tri-Wizard Tournament.
What did you think about this chapter, Mary?
Exposition and like setting the ground rules of here's what we're working on. It was nothing super, you know. We did get to meet Mad-Eye Moody, which is very important, and we did get the ground rules of what the Tri-Wizard Tournament is, expectations. I felt like we were at the beginning of school assembly.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is what it was. I mean, we've all been there, particularly if this is not your first year at a school, mm-hmm. and you have to go in, you have to learn to the rules, you know, don't pull the fire extinguisher, don't go into the forbidden forest, here's the other things that you can't have, you know, because Mr. Filch said there's a list of like 400 things, you can check it out if you want to. By the way, here's the new teacher. Mm-hmm. Like this, being someone who, for those of you who don't know, I was a teacher for about, I'm going to say 9 years. In total. Yeah. So this is what it's like. You start the first day of school, you get all the kids together, you introduce the new faculty and staff, lay down the rules, let them know about the big things that are happening that year, and then you send them off on their way. What I did find super interesting is that this is Harry's first sorting ceremony that he gets to watch, because the first year he was sorted, the second year he had the whole Ford Anglia, Whomping Willow, Hot Mess Express, and then last year he had an issue with the Dementor.
Yes, where he wasn't there. That's right. He showed up late. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he like got blacked out.
Yes.
And they had to take care of him.
That's right. So he missed the whole thing.
Yeah.
Poor thing.
So he's excited to watch this. I mean, to us, we might be like, "Oh, this is boring."
But you know, on the other hand, though, there is this great back and forth between he and Nearly Headless Nick, where Nearly Headless Nick says, "Good evening," said beaming at them. "Says who?" said Harry, taking off his sneakers and emptying them of water. I guess my question to you, Mary, is...
Harry's not mad about the evening. He's saying evening isn't good.
No,
the weather
I know.
Is poor.
But the weather is bad, obviously.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a whole thing, right? And Peeves is throwing water balloons at them, and they're already wet as it is, so don't even worry about it. And McGonagall's kind of like rushing around, trying to talk to people and get them all corralled, and kids are falling into the lake, and it's Dennis who falls into the lake.
Of course
it's Dennis. And you know, there's Colin Creevy talking about Dennis, and Harry's like, yeah, okay, yeah, sure, fine. Like, okay. Like,
Harry's just on overload.
What I'm getting at is this. For the first, well, actually the first three books, the entrance to Hogwarts has felt magical. It has felt like we're going to a magical place.
Mm-hmm.
This just feels like, okay, we're going back to school. And that's it. Do you see what I'm saying?
Kind of. But I think we had so much of like the newness and the magical bits from the Quidditch World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And I also feel like, yeah, I mean, you get to a certain point when you're going to a new school or a new job or just a new place, and it doesn't feel so new anymore. It's right. Still great, but it's like, I can be a little cozy.
Yeah, I can play this off a little cool,
yeah,
almost.
Yeah, you know, I can lean back and know that I'm not the one being sorted. I'm not, like, being killed by a tree this year or a Dementor or anything. Like, I think, yeah, Harry's an upperclassman at this point.
He's like the middle.
It's the middle.
Yeah.
But you know that fourth years look at themselves like, we've been here. We know what's going on. We get the fun bits, of course, of the Sorting Hat with its new song. And I loved Ron's way of saying, like, it must be really boring being a hat. You know, it's, I suppose he just spends all year making up a new song. And of course, he goes in through how Hogwarts was founded, the different abilities and the different personality traits that mm-hmm. the four different heads of the school, you know, the four wizards of renown really cared about, and how the school kind of came to be. So I like that, just to kind of remind everybody. I do think, I think that this book came out, let me see what year it came out. I think this came out the year the movies started, or like the movies were just about to start. So to me, I almost felt like, let me see, 2000. So the movie, I think, came out in 2001. So probably talks were happening when this book came out. Maybe when she was writing it, they had already been saying, like, oh yeah, we're going to make these into movies. So part of me wondered, did she feel the need here in book four to refresh everybody's mind about the different houses, because maybe people might be picking this book up first? You know, maybe it's going to be brand new on the shelves and stuff. So for the first three books, she kind of goes through and it's like, once again, Harry was raised a muggle and blah, 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 or raised by muggles. So I like that the author is able to interweave bits that we as readers of these books, we already know about Slytherin and Hufflepuff and Gryffindor and Ravenclaw. But it's either, you know, just in case you are picking this up for the first time, or just in case maybe you read the other books and you kind of forgot about the other houses, because they do sound like funny words. You know, if you're someone who didn't necessarily take these books very seriously, or you didn't read them a million times, they might have been like, oh, what was that S house? Slithersloth or something, you know? Like, I liked how it had to be refreshed.
You know, I'm sitting here, I just happen to have the Sorcerer's Stone in front of me. And if you're watching the video, that's what I'm doing right now. I'm looking at this. And I have, obviously, the Goblet of Fire in front of me. But I wanted to compare the two different songs. I'm like, okay, is it really a different song? Like, is it really is. That? It 100% is.
Yeah.
I wanted to verify. I mean, it goes over pretty much the same stuff, you know. But, mm-hmm. like, it is actually different. And it looks actually to be much longer than the first song from the Sorcerer's Stone. So mm-hmm. it's just an interesting little tidbit that, in fact, the hat probably did sit there all year to make up a brand new song.
I love it. I absolutely love it. So we're hanging out. Peeves is just being a punk. He's also upset because they had a council. And
he ain't allowed in.
He is not allowed at this feast, so that's why he was getting pretty crabby. We get to hear all this, of course, from Nearly Headless Nick. They also talk about how siblings do not have to be in the same house. Harry just thought that's how it was. Once mm-hmm. again, this is his second sorting ceremony, and he's just taking that from his knowledge of what it's like with the Weasleys. And Hermione sets him straight, saying Parvati Patil's twin is in Ravenclaw, and they're identical. You'd think that they would be together, wouldn't right. you? And this made me wonder, are the Patil twins in the movie, I believe they're both in Gryffindor.
That's the way my memory serves.
Agreed. So we need to go through. I also liked this because then you think about Sirius and Regulus Black, who...
Yeah, that's the first place my brain yeah. went to.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously within the context of this story, they're not getting the Regulus Black yet.
No.
I don't even think he's even been introduced
yet. Oh, no,
yet.
Not at all.
Yeah.
But it is interesting because, you know, we as avid readers who've read, we know the future, we right. have the inner eye, that we can say, oh yeah, no, it's true.
So that does go to show you too, the natural power of the author, where mm-hmm. she's already introducing this idea,
even in the book epilogue. Four. The epilogue, this is a big thing with Albus Severus.
Yes,
and
right.
he's like, "Oh, what's gonna happen? What if I get into Slytherin?" You know,
there's a meme out there that says Harry Potter named his kid like a Harry Potter nerd would, Albus Severus.
Hashtag true.
Oh man, that's so funny. But yeah, hashtag no, the author is already setting this up, and you don't even know it necessarily.
No.
So that when it does come to Regulus Black and Sirius Black, you already have this even subconscious notion, this recognition that no, siblings can be in different houses mm-hmm. and everything, and it makes sense.
Yeah.
So I don't know if she already planned this in advance. Who knows?
Her brain.
But
authors' brains in general are this beautiful
Yeah, Banana Land.
Yeah, I love it. We do, of course, get to see someone sorted into Ravenclaw. The Ravenclaw table erupts. Harry catches eyes with Cho Chang. And I loved this bit. For a fleeting second, Harry had a strange desire to join the Ravenclaw table, too.
Oh,
14-year-old, like, major crush. And I just love this because it is important for us to know that we are in a book with young teens who are finding themselves, finding their feelings, and all of the attractions that go with it. We have Dennis Creevy coming on up. Guess what? I fell in the lake.
Can we talk about Dennis real quick?
Dennis YOLOs so hard.
He is.
You only live once, and I may be 11, but I'm going to live 11 to the fullest.
Yes, absolutely. And there's also a fun little piece of trivia.
Like, here. You want to live each day like Dennis Creevy, right?
Oh, just to the fullest.
Do it.
Our son loves this book and listens to this book on Audible constantly, and as well as all the other Harry Potter books.
He's only actually listened up to 6. I finally let him listen to The Half-Blood Prince.
But one day...
Hasn't listened to 7 yet.
But one day, we were all outside, and he says, oh, look, I found a baby rabbit.
Bunny, bunny.
I found a baby bunny. Look at it. And he's like, we should name it. I was like, okay, what do you want to call it? And without missing a beat, he's like, Dennis.
Right away.
And at the time, obviously, we hadn't read this yet. We're like... That is the most rare. Why would you ever call the bunny named Dennis? What? And then he's like, oh, I did it because of Colin Creevy's brother, Dennis. Yeah. He's young. He's
obviously.
A baby.
Obviously.
And we're like, you? Oh, my God.
Nerd!
Oh, goodness. I love you. And then we found the whole family of bunny rabbits, and so we named them all.
But they weren't named any more Creevy names.
No. It was just Dennis.
And Stephen and Barbara.
But I, Stephen and Barbara. That's right. We had to come up with those names. Oh, goodness gracious.
What? But I just think that it's funny how he falls in. He's so incredibly happy. They talk about how probably the giant squid was what pushed him back in. We get the little nod about how just tender giant Hagrid is. We get some more descriptions of the people at the staff table. And of course, there is a seat missing. But before we get to there, we learn about the house elves that are at Hogwarts. There's over 100 house elves here. Blake, I've asked you to please put your hatred of Spew aside, okay? Just put it aside right now.
I'm trying.
Hermione, no, I think part of the reason you hate it is because of its initials, and because also this is your first time in the book, and you know that this is going to be something that's going to be an ongoing theme. But truly, think about it. Slave labor is happening in the kitchens beneath these children's feet. And from what Hermione knows, being raised, you know, muggle-born, all she knows about house elves is Dobby. That's it. All she and Harry know is Dobby, who is like frightened beyond belief. If he wants to do something of their own free will, they have to hurt themselves, that they are stuck with these families against their will. You know, she doesn't know. And then she sees poor Winky, and Winky's freaking out because Winky has to like be on this high thing and gets... All Hermione has seen is slaves.
Listen, we've talked ad nauseum about how much Mary is like Ron, book Ron, because she really is. However,
your cousin from Boston,
Mary, when it comes to this,
when it comes to Spew,
this is
Spew. She doesn't like it called Spew.
This is all Mary. This is 100% Mary. Yeah. Mary gets her sights fixed on something like this, and she dives headfirst.
Like a true Gryffindor, when things are not fair, I will fight for things
for
people.
All I could think of when I was reading this, when there was slave labor, said Hermione, breathing hard through her nose. That's what made this dinner slave labor.
Yep.
I didn't see Hermione's face. I saw Mary's face.
Oh my! I could picture this like at our Thanksgiving dinner. Like, had I known that my family had it made by house elves, that's exactly how I would have handled it. Putting my fork down, slave labor.
Slave labor. Like, oh.
I love how she like knocks over her goblet. There's pumpkin juice staining the entire tablecloth all over.
She refuses to eat. And like, this is totally Mary the whole way.
And Ron's just egging around the whole time.
Oh, look.
Your favorite. Look at it. There's a treacle chart. There's some spotted dick, some chocolate gâteau, everything. All your favorites, Hermione.
Look at this.
You sure you don't want to eat it?
Just busting on her a little bit. I like that. Listen, this whole subplot with the house elves, I've actually given it a lot of thought, honestly.
Good.
And I'm surprised. I still don't like it. Mm. But why? Why don't I like it? And I'll tell you why.
It's because you're a Slytherin. You probably would have had one.
Definitely would have had one. But not because of that. But more because it's just juvenile. It feels juvenile.
I actually think it's above that. House elves are, in this series, if it weren't for the house elves, we would not have made it through this series.
No, I don't mean the subject matter. The subject matter is very intense, right? Yes. I mean, we're talking slave labor, okay? Yes. So, and we could take this conversation down a whole new route if we wanted to.
Okay.
Which I don't want to do.
No, I think what it is...
No. With the way that it's presented...
Let me finish. I'm contradicting, but okay.
Let me finish my thought, and then we can contradict all you'd like. The way that it's presented...
Debate club, here we go.
The way that it's presented through Hermione's POV is very juvenile. And I would say that even the book's handling so far of house elves in terms of their labor is very juvenile. It is not approached in an academic way, if you will, or a logical way. What we're getting is just the bitterness of a 15 or 14-year-old girl. And that is one thing. That's fine. But I don't find it appealing when I'm reading it. And that's why I'm saying I don't care about the bitterness of a 14-year-old girl.
Like, you're literally being introduced to this. I do think that we need to put things in context, that the one and only Harry Potter and Sacred Text in-person reading that you have been with me was all about the topic.
100%. That was...
of elvish warfare.
And it's no coincidence that I never went back.
Exactly. So I think that is what has poisoned you, because I think that if it weren't for that, you wouldn't be like, such aversion, because there's so many other things that have just as much weight or as little as weight.
Well, I'm only talking about to what I have seen so far.
I think your vision is cloudy because of your experience with the vegan pumpkin pasties that we ate.
The lady that was obsessed with birds.
She leads owl tours.
Doesn't matter. She was unreasonable.
She works for the Audubon Society. It does matter.
Unreasonably obsessed with birds.
She works with birds, and we were asking her when her upcoming owl walk was going to be and the next full moon. This was... for Harry Potter friends, this would have been your dream come true. Next time you're in Providence, when the sessions are back in person, we can go together. Because my husband stinks. And all he did was, like, about to eat a thing and then was like, ew, this is filled with pumpkin. Which, hello, how are
I'm
we
out
even
on
married?
Pumpkin.
How are we even married? Out
on pumpkin.
Secondly, he finds out it's vegan, as if that would really have changed it. He could have eaten it and never known, but he's like, vegan. Oh my God, why is that girl wearing a bird shirt? Well, Blake, she likes birds. Just like you like Star Wars and you wear Star Wars shirts, some people wear bird shirts. And she actually works the Audubon Society, man. And she loves owls. And I love to ask her about...
Just a bunch of nerds
talking about elvish welfare very seriously. And we went into some beautiful discussions that Blake, as soon as we left, this was the sound I heard. And he was like, you can go there from now on.
Never going back, Mary.
Yeah.
Never doing that.
I'm going to keep my Mondays to myself. I am never getting a babysitter again so I can go to Harry Potter book club.
Pay your freaking babies. I paid to talk about Spew.
So I just need to share all this because I think that your horrific aversion to Hermione finding out that they're slave labor is wrong when you just think about the book and people needed your backstory.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Okay. Mad-Eye Moody. Mad-Eye Moody shows on up. very late. He's completely scarred. His whole mouth is misshaped. There's a huge chunk of his nose missing. The lightning had thrown the man's face into sharp relief, and it was a face unlike any Harry had ever seen.
Yes, thank you.
It looked as though it had been carved out of weathered wood by someone who had only the vaguest idea of what human faces are supposed to look like and was none too skilled with a chisel. Every inch of skin seemed to be scarred. The mouth looked like a diagonal gash, and a large chunk of the nose is missing. But it was the man's eyes that made him frightening. One of them was small, dark, and beady. The other was large, round as a coin, and a vivid electric blue. The blue eye was moving ceaselessly, without blinking, and was rolling up and down from side to side, quite independently of the normal eye. And then it rolled right over, pointing into the back of the man's head so that they all could see the whiteness.
Oh, so good. This is the author at her best. This is the author talking about, you know, the things that she is talking about in this chapter, and then all of a sudden stopping everything to describe Mad-Eye Moody in a perfect way. I mean, it's the person who has the vaguest idea of what a human face should look like and was none too talented with the chisel. Like, tremendous. You have an instant recognition of what of what Mad-Eye's, even if it doesn't fall within the recognition of the author's vision for what it is, you already have it because of this. This is the author at her best, and just a great bit of writing to set the scene for that. My question for you, Mary, in my recollection of this moment in the film was that as soon as Mad-Eye entered, the ceiling freaked out.
Yes.
And it does so here as well. And he goes up to Dumbledore and he says, "Ah, stupid ceiling." Is it Hogwarts, the school, recognizing that it's not Mad-Eye, or is that just...
Excellent question.
Is that just is it just the fact that the ceiling is mimicking the weather outside, and that's that?
I will look into it. I will say in the book it has made it abundantly clear that this is a terrible storm. So in the book right now, I don't think there's anything that clearly says, "Oh, the school knew that it was Barty Crouch Jr. Oh my gosh!" Right. You're right. It makes a very dramatic deal of it in the movie.
Yes.
Let me double check.
Okay.
I'm a little foggy on that area.
No, that's fine. Even if we have some nerds that are watching or listening right now, if you know the answer, please let us know. Just because, I mean, that opens up to a whole other conversation about the awareness of the school, and is the school a sentient being who recognizes, you know, good from evil, can see through the Polyjuice potion, and how much in communication is Dumbledore with the school? Mm-hmm. Because remember, as we've talked about throughout this whole series so far, Dumbledore has a knowledge of what's happening. It's the school seems to want Harry to remember in the Sorcerer's Stone. The school seems to want Harry to go down the hallway to get to Fluffy, and it pushes him that way. The school has these disappearing stairs. The stairs move. In all the paintings, like how much are the paintings connected to the school? There is a huge conversation to be had here about how much the school does, how aware of itself is it, and how much communication is Dumbledore in with the school, and how much Dumbledore knows overall. Right?
Interesting. I love this. I love this discussion. And friends who are listening, please feel free to email us, maryandblakemedia@gmail.com, if you have thoughts on this subject matter, because we're going to delve deep into it with you at some point. So he extends on up, and of course, Dumbledore introduces him. This is your new Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher, Alistair Moody. All of the Weasleys and Harry are like, "Oh my gosh, it's Moody. Yay, this is so exciting and totally scary. And what happened to him?" Well, he's kind of crazy.
There's a great part here where Dumbledore tells everybody, Okay, as I was saying, he said, smiling at the sea of students before him, all of whom were still gazing transfixed at Mad-Eye Moody, we are to have the honor of hosting a very exciting event over the coming months, an event which has not been held for over a century, and it is my very great pleasure to inform you that the Triwizard Tournament will be taking place at Hogwarts this year. You're joking, said Fred Weasley loudly. The tension that had filled the hall ever since Moody's arrival suddenly broke. Nearly everyone had laughed, and Dumbledore chuckled appreciatively. I am not joking, Mr. Weasley, he said. Though, now you mention it, I did hear an excellent one over the summer about a troll, a hag, and a leprechaun who all go into a bar. Professor McGonagall cleared her throat loudly. Not this time. No, said Dumbledore. Where was I? Ah, yes, the Triwizard Tournament. I love that bit of writing, and I know there are lots of people, lots of Potter nerds, that do not like Michael Gambon as Dumbledore in the films.
Particularly in this film.
Especially in this film. He finally got it, I think, in the sixth film.
You didn't even read them. That's why. Like, literally.
Well, I mean, that's. I don't care about that. Because so what? Who cares? Like, you have to go off of what the script in front of you says. And that is my issue. Is it Michael Gambon's fault necessarily that he didn't play it well enough? And there's a whole
cadre
of fans that would agree with you, Mary.
I think it's the director's fault.
But I don't think he was ever given this kind of whimsy. Like saying, oh, well, you know, actually, I do have a good joke. Like, none of that is present in Michael Gambon's Dumbledore. Not the same way that it was with Richard Harris.
Correct. You get a little bit of him later being a little whimsical.
A little bit. And that might also be a derivative. It might be derivative of the way that the films were shot, right? So, like... In the serious tones of the film.
But I will never forget. Did you put your name in the Goblet
of Fire? Yeah, no, you can't.
We will never forgive that. But yeah, like you said, like the little jokes and how he's like, oh, I got a joke this summer. You know, these people walking into a bar. Never. Or just like, I've got these great things. Tuck in. Like we've talked about he had those little words that were like, beep, zippy, dip, blip, blip. Like,
yes.
Just nonsense words.
Even something as simple as when Richard Harris is trying the every flavor beans, right? In the film, he tries it. He goes, huh, maybe buttered popcorn, maybe?
And yes.
He goes, huh, earwax. You know, like, you don't get any of that with Michael Gambon.
No.
And that might be the fault of the writing. And especially the fault of the director.
Correct.
Because director sets tone.
Agreed.
You know, for whatever happens. And I just want to kind of talk about that.
That it may not necessarily be the actor's fault, that really we need to think about the words that he was given, the direction he was given, because had the director wanted him to be whimsy, wanted the words to be different, wanted the tone to be different, it would have been his job.
Right.
The director's. I love it. So, of course, he's starting to tell all the kids about the Triwizard Tournament. That's where Fred Weasley, you're joking! Like, Fred Weasley, a wizard-born boy who's known all of this, you know, knows that it's happening, which is interesting because it hasn't happened in over a century. So, somehow this has been something that has been talked about that he knows about, even though it's not like his siblings were in it. It used to happen every 5 years.
Right.
Hasn't happened for a century because of so many deaths. But Fred Weasley knew about it, and they're so incredibly excited about this. And then, of course, they announce that the Department of International Magical Cooperation and Magical Games and Sports have decided that it is time. So, of course, they are going to be working along. The heads of Beauxbatons and Durmstrang will be arriving along with their shortlisted contenders in October. So remember we were talking about people having to kind of sign waivers like, of course my kid can go abroad. So it's just this little micro group of them, the best of the best. It's like the Hunger Games, you know what I mean? Who's going to volunteer to be tribute? And I love it that that all takes place on Halloween.
Yes, absolutely.
Unlike how it is in the movie where it's like, you know, they had to do it just to keep things sped up.
Yes.
Just to have it as part of the welcoming feast that everybody arrived then as well. And then, of course, it is announced that there's going to be 1,000 galleons personal prize money.
And something happens here, too, with Ron, where they're saying, where Fred says, "They're not stopping me entering," said Fred stubbornly, also scowling at the top table. "The champions will get to go to do all sorts of stuff you'd never be allowed to do normally, and 1,000 galleons prize money." "Yeah," said Ron, a faraway look on his face. "Yeah, 1,000 galleons. We're getting a real sense of Ron and what is coming our way for Ron Weasley in this book. It's this chapter. There's a great three beat, the way that it feels. The chapter starts off with Ron getting smoked from the clouds by Peeves with the water balloons. And you can the way that it deflates Ron and the way that he reacts to it, just awful. And then there's this moment where Ron, we talked about, I think it was just the previous chapter where he said, "Why is everything I own rubbish?"
Yeah.
Or it was two chapters ago, whatever it was. You can see Ron, the gears in his head spinning about what he can do with this 1,000 galleons, what he can do to finally stand out from his brothers and in this family, and what he can do to buy. Maybe he can get himself the dress robes, or he can get whatever he wants to do. He doesn't have to feel like, "Oh, when the trolley cart comes, Harry's going to buy me a bunch of stuff," you know, or he has his little home wrapped lunch or whatever.
Yeah.
He's got 1,000 galleons. He can do whatever he wants with it. And then the chapter ends, to finish the three beat here, where Harry, Ron, and Neville got into the pajamas and into bed. Someone, a house elf, no doubt.
True.
Interesting that the narrator is taking Hermione's side here.
No, just noting that things that get done may not magically always just be a poof. That things that have gotten done all this time, just like the horseless carriages. I take this not as the narrator being like, "Oh, I care about elvish, you know, rights," even though the narrator probably does, because the author wrote it.
Right.
But that things that you just think are magical and have nothing behind it, thestrals, everything that the house elves do, oftentimes do.
Makes sense. All right. But the house elf had placed warming pans between the sheets. It was extremely comfortable lying there in bed and listening to the storm raging outside. "I might go in for it, you know," Ron said sleepily through the darkness. "If Fred and George find out how to, the tournament, you never know, do you?" "Suppose not." Harry rolled over in his bed, a series of dazzling new pictures forming in his mind's eye. He had hoodwinked the impartial judge into believing that he was 17. He had become Hogwarts champion. He was standing in those grounds, his arms raised in the triumph of the whole school, all of whom were applauding and screaming. He had won the Triwizard Tournament. Cho's face stood out particularly clearly in the blurred crowd, her face glowing with admiration.
Of course.
Harry grinned into his pillow, exceptionally glad that Ron couldn't see what he could. Okay,
so cute.
Two things I have to talk about here. First, that ends the three beat. Ron saying, "I think I'm going to do this." And what that sets up is the great disappointment that when Harry does this and it's not Ron, and the jealousy and everything, that is something I think the films definitely miss out on.
I agree.
100%.
The films do Ron Weasley a major disservice.
Yes.
Overall.
In the film, I think it's legitimate the way that he feels, but if you just included this bit in the film, it doesn't seem as whiny, and it doesn't seem as...
Ron's essentially the Chewbacca. Like, he's there if you need another guy to do things. He's there to, like, walk with you and, like, bust with you every once in a while.
Yeah. I think Ron's arc in that film is unclear. And it's unclear because of this. If you just included this one little scene in the film, his arc becomes so much clearer.
He's definitely jealous. It is very, very clear in this film how jealous he is.
Yeah, but for what particular reason? Is it because of fame? Is it because Harry's Harry? I think it's unclear. Like, yes, it is clear that Ron's jealous, but why? It's one thing to say, "Oh, he's jealous, yay," or "Wee, he's jealous, that sucks." But why? That when you get more pointed, when you finally figure out that torture device, that gives it more reality. That gives it, and the movie, as it relates to Ron, is unruly, in my opinion. If they included this, it becomes far more pointed.
You get the dress robes later.
Yes.
You don't get the dress robes now. You don't have all of his, you know, we couldn't afford this, as much magnified in the beginning of the movie. So I hear what you're saying.
And then the second point I want to make about this, Harry grinned into his pillow, exceptionally glad that Ron couldn't see what he could. There are two ways I could take this.
Okay.
He's just happy that he's a Triwizard Tournament and champion, and in he is thinking about being the Triwizard champion, and he's glad that Ron didn't see that because he doesn't want to break Ron's heart for that. Or he's a 14-year-old boy.
Okay, yep, and we know where that's going. This is a family-friendly show.
Just throwing that out there.
Thank you. All right, switching
gears. For everybody
gears.
To just... Food for thought.
Yep. Okay. On that note, I think it is time to shift gears.
All right. Let's. You got anything else you want to say about this chapter?
No.
Okay. It's time for a different perspective. Are you ready?
Oh, okay.
All right. Here we go. Let's get this done, shall we? Here it is.
Holy cricket. You're Harry Potter. I'm Hermione Granger. And you are?
Fred Weasley, and I'm so excited. Oh, my God. My dreams have come true.
Fred, what's going on, bud?
Oh, man. Oh, man. Listen. I love chaos. You know Loki?
Oh, yeah. Chaos. Chaos is all about it.
Loki's my boy. So, you know, I was reading this book, like the 100 most chaotic things that have happened in sports.
Sure.
Triwizard Tournament, no joke, in the top 10.
Really?
Amazing. Yeah. I mean, hello. Where do you have, like, kids dying. At numerous, like, crazy rates? But there was always just so much money at the helm. And I think some of their problems, you know, the Muggles have this movie, The Hunger Games, and if you've ever seen it, there's little kids and then old kids. That was one of the big problems. They would literally stick in a first-year Muggle-born kid.
Yeah.
Throw him in there against some, like, you know, burly, jacked up, like, wizard born for life.
Dragons, maybe?
Seriously. Like, no, I'm just saying, like, he'd have to combat people who know what they're doing. Yep. So it's generally...
Could you imagine little Dennis going up against
a
dragon?
Exactly. Like, that's what used to happen.
Use him as a toothpick.
Yeah. So, anyway, I'm prepped. I am prepped. I delved into this. Nobody really knows. Like, my mom doesn't think I study. I study what I want to study.
Sure.
I study the Triwizard
Tournament. You're not lazy.
No.
You're just focused.
Super focused. I can't wait to get my shop up and running. And the fact that I can get 1,000 galleons, I'm doing this.
I heard it was like 70 grand. In American dollars.
Whatever.
what is that?
Muggle. So, I don't speak Muggle. I'm just so excited. And I feel like after this summer of perfecting the potions and perfecting the charms, you know, what we do is high level skills. If Snape only had, you know, a chapter in his book
about, seriously,
I don't need owls. I don't need newts. Nope. I don't need any of that kind of stuff for my exams. When I set my mind to it, I've got it. I'm going to find a way to make myself get inside that Triwizard Tournament.
Street smart. That's what you are.
Muggle.
You don't need no books.
I don't even know what that means, Muggle, but yes. Yes. I am.
Street
tell
smart.
My mom.
Yeah, I'll tell you. She's too busy at
she's shopping.
Is shopping. Having a mimosa.
Yeah, she's on her spa day.
Yeah.
And scene.
Good job. Good job, Marvin, as always. All right. It is now time for the listener questions. Of course, ladies and gents, if you want to get in touch with Mary and I, you can email us at maryandblakemedia@gmail.com or find us on the social media platforms, all of them, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, all except TikTok, because as always, Mary, TikTok is...
It's awesome, and we are on it, so just ignore Blake, because Mary and Blake is on it.
It's ruining America. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. Ruining America. All right, let's get the listener questions in.
Oh, Miles here.
All right, the first email comes from Timothy. He says, what do you think would happen if Hogwarts students got to choose their house similar to the Divergent trilogy? And this is a very important question because, by all accounts, students do get to choose their house.
I mean, yeah, when it comes down to it, if you have a preference, you can. Hermione chose, Harry chose, and Lord knows who else chose.
Right. So, I mean, like, I'm not sure if... the spirit of the question, Mary, is there's no hat whatsoever, right?
Yeah.
The spirit of the question is, I choose to be like, I go to Hogwarts, I show up, I'm on the boat, maybe I fall off and I get helped up by the squid like Dennis. Mm-hmm. You never know, okay? Maybe you run into a couple of ghosts.
Yeah.
You get some balloons thrown at you. All these things are happening. I get it. And then you show up, you have some food, maybe some pumpkin pasties. Definitely not vegan. We want the full thing, okay? Real pumpkin pasties, okay? And then you just show up and you say...
You wouldn't even eat it.
What? Don't even want it. Don't even want it in the same room as me.
I'll eat it all.
But then you go from that and you say, okay, I'm in Slytherin. I choose to be in Slytherin. Or I choose... I don't know why anybody would choose to be in Hufflepuff, but you chose to be a Puff.
They're the most hardworking and loyal.
And don't nobody care.
Amazing hosts. I do. You need to stop your hate.
Oh, man. So... The spirit of jokes. I kid.
He loves our Hufflepuffs.
I apologize.
Most people in our life for are
nothing.
Hufflepuff.
I apologize for nothing. So, do you like? Would there be a popular house? Like, would it be the Gryffindor house?
I don't even think I like you today.
Why not? We're having fun. We're having a good time. Making some bad decisions together. Come
we
on.
Were, until you hated on pumpkin and Hufflepuffs. No, I don't think that there's a popular house.
Yeah.
I think that there might be popular people in certain houses.
Yes.
I think that people who don't know much might look at who's won the house cup and think that that might be a popular house.
Right, yeah.
But aside from that, I think it really just comes down to...
I kind of look at it like the college recruiting, right? College recruiting for like sports. So like Alabama shows up on your door and says, or... let's say BC shows up
Who
on your
cares?
Door.
Like, what is this job?
BC
talk?
Shows up to your door and says, hey, we want you to play football. And you're like, yeah, that's great. Cool. Like, you're a good school. I like to get a great education. Yay, BC. But then Nick Saban in Alabama shows up in your door and they've won the national championship God knows how many times. And they're like, no, don't go to BC. We want you to be on that team.
Well, you get a better
education. What choice are you going
to
make?
Well, that's what I'm saying. But if you're a football player, you'll go to the better football school. So if you are someone who cares about the ideals and the values that a Ravenclaw would mm-hmm. care about, that's the school that you would want to go to. Just like you'd want to go to a football school. You'd want to go into the Ravenclaw house.
I guess the conversation is circling around this idea of like almost like recruiting. Like, okay, I'm a Ravenclaw because I love books and I want to reason things and I'm going to go there. But I'm really good at Quidditch too. Yeah. And the Gryffindor Quidditch team has won the cup like
only
5 years in a row.
Because the current kids were in school.
I know, but again, it's just like college recruiting. I think that's exactly what would happen.
Interesting.
I think that's what would happen. All right, the next question comes from Alexandra. She says, Mary and Blake, I wrote to you before and I was so excited to hear my name being said on air.
Alexandra. That's so nice.
That is very nice of you. Thank
you. And hello, hello.
Hello and welcome. She does have another question for us, though, says Alexandra. What are your thoughts on what Harry's soul would be like and how he would act if Voldemort killed the Harry part of Harry, not the Voldemort part of Harry? Hope to join the nerd clan soon because of the Harry Potter inspiration you guys have given me.
Oh, yay.
Well, you're welcome. We are happy to inspire all the HP love. So, Mary, what do you think would happen? Harry's soul would be like if, in how he would act, if Voldemort killed the Harry part of Harry and not the Voldemort part of Harry? I think it would just be Voldemort.
Yeah, like a possessed Harry.
Yeah, like that. The Voldemort possessed Harry. Like in.
Well, I don't think the Voldemort part would have sacrificed himself to die. Like Harry got that like get out of jail free pass because he sacrificed himself.
Right, and but I mean, let's just talk about the spirit of the question, right? Okay. Regardless of stats of inerts, right? Here's what I'm thinking. Harry, the body, cannot live without Harry, the soul.
Yeah.
And there's no chance that Voldemort, regardless of whether or not he chose to sacrifice, whatever, doesn't matter.
I mean, maybe he would have just been like a shell of a body and Nagini could have gotten inside of it, just like he did with Bathilda Bagshot. She did with Bathilda Bagshot.
Right. But that seems Bathilda was like unintelligible.
Yeah.
Unintelligible.
That's what I bet could have happened.
Yes, but let's
like
just say,
Harry.
But again, stats are for nerds. Let's just say for the sake of argument that there is a chance that the Voldemort part of Harry's soul or whatever, the Voldemort soul can inhabit Harry's body. It would just seem to me to be just Voldemort walking around on Harry's body.
Okay.
I don't know. Do you have any thoughts about that?
I think it would be like a Bethilda Bagshot part two.
All right, fair enough. All right, anything else you want to talk about? Anything else you got to get off your chest, Marvin? No. That's it. That's all for the emails.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Let's close this bad boy out because I want to start watching the Patriots game. I'm ready for that.
Okay,
here we go.
Thank you all so incredibly much for joining in live, listening through your podcast apps, listening, jointhenerdclan.com. However you listen and participate, know that we are ever so grateful for each and every single one of you. We have delved into the Potter series due to the time of darkness that the pandemic brought, sadly, into all of our lives.
Connect.
Exactly, yeah. So still to just connect with people from all over the world. So know that your emails mean a lot to us. Reaching out to us means a lot to us. We do have an exclusive Facebook community. Just search Mary and Blake. We would absolutely positively love to have you there. We're on Instagram as well, YouTube, and Facebook. Those are the three main platforms that we really do participate on. Yep. And yeah, just make sure that you hit that subscribe button in your podcast app.
And if there's one other thing I'd like you to do too, please. And if you think what we do here provides value for you and your Harry Potter experience, and whatever experience it may be, if we provide value, please do give us a written review and a rating on Apple Podcasts or on Facebook or wherever you are able to provide a review. It just helps people get introduced to the podcast, and we would appreciate it.
Thank you all so much. My name's Mary.
My name is Blake.
Mischief managed.